the Honourable Dean Smuts, who's attending other committee meetings. But welcome to you all. We have Mr. Bassett and his team here. We have someone from the State Law Advisor's Office. You're also welcome. Honourable members, we've had a fair amount of input on the trafficking bill, as you all know. We listened to a gentleman last week, which we all found very interesting. I thought that we should meet today and complete the process whereby the drafters take us through the rest of the bill. I'm hoping that we can do that, Mr. Bassett. I'm not saying you must rush it, but just so that we go through the rest of the clauses in the bill. We finished at clause 16, according to Mr. Bassett and Diplonani. So we will begin at clause 17, and hopefully we can get to the end of the bill. All right. Mr. Bassett, over to you. If you can just introduce your team. We know who they are, but we may just forget.
Thank you very much, Chair. On my right is Ms. Angela Stone. She's going to do the presentation today with the help of Ms. Louisa Steedman. It's on her right. Ms. Steedman was the researcher at the Law Commission during the investigation of the Law Commission, so she's been involved right from the outset. And then behind me we have Ms. Pumelela Ngema. She's the State Law Advisor. Just want to point out, Chair, that the State Law Advisor that was that dealt with the bill and the certification during the certification process is on maternity leave. So Ms. Ngema is standing in for Ms. Williams. So she hasn't been involved from the outset, but she's here to provide the support that she can give us. Thank you very much. Chair, with your permission, I'm going to ask my two colleagues to go through the bill as we did in the past. And the modus operandi to date is that we set out what the provisions say, the comments that we received during the public hearings, and then the department's responses to the submissions that were made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're starting off from clause 17, which provides for a recovery and reflection period. The heading of the chapter is the status of foreign victims of trafficking. Subclause 1 of clause 17 provides that despite the provisions of the Immigration Act, the Director General of Home Affairs must, in a prescribed manner and subject to the prescribed conditions, allow a foreigner who has been certified to be a victim of trafficking in terms of section 13, regardless of his or her status, to remain in the Republic for a non-renewable recovery and reflection period not exceeding 90 days. We further provide in subclause 2 that a foreigner, after a period of 30 days since he or she has been granted this recovery and reflection period, is unwilling to cooperate with law enforcement and prosecuting authorities in the investigation and the prosecution of a trafficker. An investigation must be conducted by the Director General of Social Development into his or her circumstances, to determine whether it is safe to return the victim to his country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. Subclause 3 further provides that if a foreigner is still unwilling to cooperate with law enforcement and prosecuting authorities in the investigation and prosecution of a trafficker, when the recovery and reflection period expires, the information that has been obtained from the Director General of Social Development must be provided to the Director General of Home Affairs, and it must be taken into account when deciding whether or not to repatriate the foreigner. We provide in subclause 4 that if the Department of Social Development is unable to complete an investigation into the circumstances of the foreign victim of trafficking, that department may ask in a prescribed manner the Director General of Home Affairs to extend the in a prescribed manner that period to further 6 months. It is important to note that subclause 5 provides that the granting of a non-renewable recovery and reflection period does not depend upon the willingness of a victim of trafficking to cooperate with law enforcement or prosecuting authorities, and it does not prevent or prejudice a competent authority from conducting any relevant investigation, provided that due regard is given to the emotional state of the victim.
Chairperson, I would just like to draw the committee's attention to clause 17.1, where we talk about certification of a victim of trafficking. You will remember during previous deliberations, concerns were raised that one should not use the word certification because this will basically stigmatize victims of trafficking. And we have looked at alternative wording. And some of the wording that we came up with is that the victim of trafficking should rather be issued with a letter of recognition. And we've went further to define what a letter of recognition should mean. And that means a formal written recognition that an adult person is a victim of trafficking. So just to bring to your attention that that is something that we've looked at to change.
If you look at the...
To ask questions at this stage, if there are any, or what?
During the public hearings, the various representations were received on clause 17. The most of them deal with the time period and whether it is sufficient time which has been granted to, which will be granted to the victim of trafficking, which is in fact a period of 90 days. We initially thought that we could propose that the 90-day period be amended to a period of 6 months, and that the period that the Department of Social Development will have will then be extended to 9 months. It must be pointed out that the Department of Social Development feels that this might be too long a period, as I understand that the organization can only, or is only geared to deal with victims or people in the care for a period up to 3 months. So that is just something that we need to take into account. At the public hearings, one of the members of the committee was of the opinion that the Director General of Home Affairs should only be allowed to grant this recovery and reflection period without attaching any provisions thereto. That is also something that we need to take into account. I just think that the question is whether there shouldn't be some kind of guidance given to the Director General. I think... Sweet has had a recommendation that the words physical, psychological and social should be included before the word recovery in the heading. The department is is of the view that the word recovery is wide enough to include the physical, psychological and social recovery of a victim. The International Association of Women Judges, the South African chapter, recommended that the clause should stipulate who will bear the expenses related to the victim's stay in South Africa during the recovery and reflection period. And our response there is that a child victim of trafficking will be accommodated either by a designated child protection organization or the provincial department of social development, and an adult victim will be accommodated by an accredited organization or a provincial department of social development. The bill provides for financial assistance to accredited organizations, whilst the Children's Act provides for financial assistance to child protection organizations. So we feel that that has been taken care of. A further recommendation by SWET was that there should not be a requirement that the victim should cooperate and that there seems to be a related threat of deportation. And the department just want to point out that clause... clause 17.5 specifically provides that the granting of this recovery and reflection period does not depend upon the willingness of a victim of trafficking to cooperate. And further, in subclause 2, we provide that the Director General of Social Development must conduct an investigation into the circumstances of the victim to see whether it will be safe to return this victim to his country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. Coming to clause 18, that deals with temporary residence. Subclause 1 provides that despite the provisions of section 11(1) of the Immigration Act, a visitor's permit may be issued to a victim of trafficking who is present in the Republic, who has agreed to cooperate with law enforcement and prosecuting authorities in the investigation and the prosecution of a case of trafficking in persons, or if an investigation referred to in section 17.2 indicates that it is not safe to return him or her to his country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. This provide in subclause 2 further that despite the provisions of section 1 of the Immigration Act, a visitor's permit may be renewed by the Director General of Home Affairs for the duration of the investigation of and the prosecution of a case of trafficking in persons. Subclause 3 provides that a visitor's permit referred to in subsection 1, that is in terms of subclause 1 of clause 18, it may be issued to a victim of trafficking regardless of his or her status, or whether a recovery and reflection period as provided for in section 17 was granted or has expired. So clause 4 provides that the Director General of Home Affairs may on humanitarian grounds extend the visitor's permit referred to in subsection 1, taking into account the likelihood that the holder of that permit may be harmed, killed or trafficked again if he or she is returned to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. And subclause 5 provides that despite the provisions of section 11.2 of the Immigration Act, the holder of a visitor's permit that has been extended on humanitarian grounds as provided for in subclause 4 may conduct work or study in the Republic.
Just with regard to clause 18.1b, you will notice that clause 18.1b provides that if a person cannot be returned to his or her country of origin or the country from where she has been trafficked, that person can be provided with a temporary residence permit. This is one of the things that we've discussed with the Department of Home Affairs. And I feel that in cases where you cannot return a victim of trafficking, the victim should rather be assisted to apply for asylum in terms of the Refugees Act instead of being provided with temporary residency.
Going to the submissions that have been received, the Legal Resources Center indicated that if the victim agrees to cooperate, he or she is entitled to a visitor's permit, but the duration of the permit and whether or not the victim can travel outside of South Africa is unclear. So the provisions of Section 11 of the Immigration Act provides that a visitor's permit may not exceed 3 months and upon application may be renewed. There was also a presentation as to whether this victim will be able to travel outside of South Africa and then be able to come back. Initially, the department saw no reason why a victim of trafficking who has the means to do so could not go back to his or her country and return to the Republic for court proceedings against the perpetrators. We spoke with the Department of Home Affairs about this. They indicated that the visitor's permit will expire once the victim leaves the country. And they feel that we should rather make use of a provision in the Immigration Act which provides that the minister may exempt a specific category of persons from the requirement of having to be in possession of a visa in order to obtain a visitor's permit. With regard to a presentation by the Legal Resources Center, that the bill is silent about the situation where a victim refuses to cooperate and what recourse does a victim have if he or she cannot be repatriated. This is a concern that is also echoed by the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. The department wishes to point out that the bill provides that victims may not be returned to their countries even if they refuse to cooperate with the authorities. Clause 30 provides that the Department of Social Development in the case of a child and the Department of Home Affairs in the case of an adult may not return that child or adult to his or her country of origin or from where he or she has been trafficked without giving due consideration to the safety of that child victim and the possibility that he or she might be harmed, killed or trafficked again. Furthermore, Clause 18.4 provides that a visitor's permit can be extended on humanitarian grounds if the victim is likely to be harmed, killed or trafficked again. Furthermore, Clause 19 provides that a foreign victim is able to apply for permanent residence if he or she may be harmed, killed or trafficked again if returned. And as Ms. Thiemann has also pointed out, this is one of the clauses that we might need to look into providing for a victim of trafficking to apply for refugee status. Coming to Clause 19, which deals with permanent residence, Clause 19 provides that a victim of trafficking is entitled to apply for permanent residence permit in terms of Section 27 of the Immigration Act after 5 years continuous residence in the Republic from the date on which a visitor's permit referred to in Section 18 was issued to him or her, upon proof by that victim to the satisfaction of the Director General of Home Affairs that he or she may be harmed, killed or trafficked again if he or she is returned to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. During the public hearings, objections were received from the Institute for Security Studies and Women's Legal Center to placing the onus on a victim of trafficking to prove that he or she may be harmed, killed or trafficked again if returned to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. This would require that victims should have access to resources and information which would not be readily be available to private individuals. They indicate that they suggest that the Department of Home Affairs would be in a better position to do this. Assessing the likelihood of harm or danger should be done on an objective basis by the Department of Home Affairs in a manner similar to that which is used in making determinations in respect of refugees and asylum seekers. The department in this regard suggests that clause 19 could possibly be amended in line with section 27C of the Refugees Act. And then that the clause 19 could possibly read as follows. A victim of trafficking is entitled to a permanent residence permit in terms of section 27 of the Immigration Act after 5 years continuous residence in a republic from the date on which a visitor's permit referred to in section 18 was issued to him or her. If the Director General Home Affairs, after considering all the relevant factors and within reasonable time, concludes that he or she will be harmed, killed or trafficked again if he or she is returned to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. And then the inclusion of the new subclause 2, when considering relevant factors, the Director General Home Affairs may request any information or clarification he or she deems necessary from the victim of trafficking and B, may consult with and invite any other person to furnish relevant information on specified matters. The Commission for Gender Equality recommended that the time period to provide a victim of trafficking with a refugee status should be calculated from the time from the date that victim first entered the Republic of South Africa as a trafficked person. In that regard, we just want to point out that the provisions of Clause 19 are in line with the provisions of Section 27C of the Refugees Act, which provides that the refugee is entitled to permanent residence after 5 years of continuous residence in the Republic from the date on which he or she was granted asylum. Mr. Chair, I don't know whether there is. I believe that there are questions.
That concludes Chapter 5. So, honourable members, let's deal with questions relating to Clause 17. Kosi Olumisa, you indicated, followed
by... Mr. President, thank you. Just two simple questions. What would be the difference, really, in essence, between a certificate and a letter of recognition? Don't they amount to the same thing in any event, that this person is marked as being a victim of trafficking? And the other one is on the question of unwilling to cooperate with law enforcement and prosecuting authorities. Do we differentiate between a person who is unwilling and a person who is unable to cooperate? Does it matter if the person is simply unwilling to cooperate or the person is unable for some reason or another, maybe for emotional stress or something like that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the status, the legal status of the 17-1 reflection period, is it assumed that the victim will be issued a visitor's permit what do you, otherwise, if it's not, then what would the legal status be of that person? Clearly here you've got 17, you've got the status, you've got the time period that we need finality on, and then you've got the further status in 18 and 19. And I just need to clarity as to, you've referred to the document that we received last year. Have you consulted further with Home Affairs, and have you got fixed positions? I'm a bit unclear as to what the situation is at the moment. What are you proposing? What is your final wording on all these issues that seem to be still quite unclear? You've made certain recommendations, but have there been further consultations with Home Affairs, Social Development, and is there a final position on the way forward with the legal status, ongoing status of victims of trafficking? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's a question of clarity around Section 17. We request the department to give us advice here. The willingness of the victim to cooperate and the victim's emotional state. Since all, to me, are emotional traits, where do we draw the line? What is the department's view on this matter? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer as far as I can in my colleague will just add. With regard to the first question as to whether there's a, do we draw a distinction between certification and a letter of recognition on the other hand, clearly this it will basically mean the same thing. The only reason why we thought of changing the wording to letter of recognition is because of the concerns raised in the past that if you're going to say a victim of trafficking once found to be a victim of trafficking will be certified, people actually feel that you're stigmatizing this victim, and also there's, and you know, if you talk about a certification, issuing of a certificate is all almost like you giving this person an award or something. And that's why they thought that we should change the wording, and we thought the best wording will be to use the wording letter of recognition, and we've actually adopted the wording from the Refugees Act. Because if a person is recognized as a refugee, the person is also issued with a letter of recognition recognizing the person to be a refugee. I hope I understood the second question correctly regarding unwillingness to cooperate and whether the person is unable to cooperate. Obviously, you will find situations where the person is unable to cooperate because the person is so traumatized, is in such an emotional state that a person is not able to cooperate, not because the person is unwilling to cooperate. And I think that's precisely why we've included the recovery and reflection period here, because one would like to give victims an opportunity to come to terms with what has happened to them. And the idea is that during the recovery and reflection period, victims will be provided with the necessary services, maybe counseling, medical attention, etc. And at some stage, you know, if you get a victim, for example, your foreign victim, if at the initial stage you say to the victim, if you do not cooperate, we're going to send you back to your country. And most victims at that stage will say, I'm going to go, you know, because they just want to get away from the circumstances. But research has shown that if you give victim a time period to come to terms with what has happened to them, if you provide them with the necessary counseling, after some stage they will then agree, but I feel safe in your hands, and now I'm willing to actually cooperate with them, with the prosecuting and law enforcement authorities. Regarding the status of victims of trafficking who have been provided with a recovery and reflection period, I think the idea here is that once A recovering reflection period has been granted to a victim of trafficking. The granting of that period will then provide a victim with a right to stay in the country for the duration of the recovery and reflection period. But that doesn't mean that the victim will automatically be issued with a visitor's permit, because you will also see in clause 18 that the visitor's permit will only be issued to those victims who are willing to cooperate with law enforcement and prosecuting authorities. But obviously you will also find situations where a victim is not willing to cooperate with law enforcement authorities, but you can also not return the victim because there's a possibility that the victim might be harmed, killed or trafficked again. So in those cases, one will then have to look at alternatives. You will either then provide a victim with temporary residency as provided for in clause 18, even though the victim is not willing to cooperate, or you can look at the other alternative of providing the victim or assisting the victim to apply for asylum in terms of the Refugees Act. With regard to the discussions, we had several discussions with the Department of Social Development as well as with the Department of Home Affairs on several of the issues that came out of the public hearing submissions and that were also raised in this committee. And I think at this stage we do have the final say of the Department of Social Development as well as Home Affairs on some of these issues. And that's why we thought that as we go through it, we will just highlight to you what these departments actually said they would like these provisions to look like. They would like to have these provisions to look like. Anything else did you want to? I'm not sure whether I've answered everything.
Not sure on in terms of Home Affairs, in terms of 17.1, how would they see that status? Are they agreeing that purely the granting of this recovery and reflection period gives in their eyes a certain status? Home Affairs, you understand that there must be a link to their legislation to grant that person a status, and maybe I haven't read it clearly, but it doesn't seem to be very clear that Home Affairs will recognize. So will they then automatically recognise a status pending an investigation by social development? We need to just be careful of that. I mean, just on the issue of the unwilling side of things, I think one needs to bear in mind that it's often because of intimidation, clearly fear from their own lives. Is that not the main reason why victims would be unwilling to cooperate? Because they've been threatened that if they do, their lives will be threatened. So it's not so much a fact that they are just being obstreperous. That might be so, but is it not in the majority of cases that they are threatened by pimps, by people that have trafficked them, that if they do cooperate, they will be killed?
Yes, but one thing that one should also then realize is here you actually deal with a victim that has been removed from the exploitative situation. And it's also then important during that stage to ensure that you do provide the victim with the necessary protective measures, whether placing the victim in your witness protection program, etc. But it's quite important that you actually get a victim to such a stage where the victim actually feels safe, to being able to say, but I feel safe enough to cooperate with law enforcement authorities to ensure that the perpetrators are brought to book. But I think you're also quite correct that one will have to look at each individual situation to actually make sure that the unwillingness is not because the victim just don't want to cooperate, but it's because of other factors. And one can then also look at how we can reformulate these provisions, because you do not want to let some victims fall through the cracks just because of the fact that the provisions are formulated as it is, but to make sure that victims do actually get the necessary assistance in order to enable them to get to a stage where they will be willing to cooperate.
Chair, we also requested a comment on 5A and B of Clause 17, namely the willingness of the victim to cooperate and the victim's emotional state. We feel that emotional state and willingness are all emotional. Now, where do we draw the line between these two concepts? What is the department's view in this regard?
I think if one look at 5B, the reason why 5B was included was because when we consulted with the relevant role players, they felt that even though you have your recovery and reflection period, that recovery and reflection period should not prohibit law enforcement authorities to do their work. So during that stage, they might be able to interview the victim to get the necessary information from the victim, but we have made reference to the emotional state to the victim just to give recognition to the fact that even though law enforcement authorities might be able to consult with the victim for purposes of the criminal case that should be that will follow, that they should be sensitive to the emotional state of the victim, because you will usually find that victims who are in that period are quite traumatized because of what actually happened to them. And if one look at 5A, what we actually say here is that whether or not the victim is willing to cooperate with law enforcement authorities, the victim can be issued with a recovery and reflection period. So the recovery and reflection period is not dependent on the victim's willingness. Only once the victim agrees to cooperate, then you will go and look at whether this victim is have been whether one would be able to provide this victim with temporary residence. So I think that's basically the distinction that one should draw between A and B.
Chair, I just want to get certainty on Mr. Swart's question. I'm not too sure whether I understood what you were saying, because we might have to go back to Home Affairs. On the status, yes.
Just in on that reflection period, how does Home Affairs see a person for that 90 days if a visitor's permit is not granted? How do they see them? Do they then, you know, what is the legal status of that person in the eyes of Home Affairs, assuming they don't get a visitor's permit?
We have just mentioned that Home Affairs have not raised any concerns in respect of 17.1, and the question that you've raised was not a specific issue that we've discussed with them, given the fact that it wasn't raised previously. But we will, in our further discussions with them, just get clarity on it.
To assist, we obviously understand that is the other clause that says no one can be prosecuted for being a victim of trafficking. So they can't be prosecuted for being illegal alien or whatever in South Africa, but they need to have some form of status pending that period, and one maybe needs to look at that.
Okay, Mr. Bassett, Mrs. Stone, you've taken note of the questions and the comments. Yeah, we'll have to think about the question of the letter of recognition, and also, honourable members, the question of the 90-day period, which some people are saying should be extended to 6 months, and then social development is saying 9 months. So we'll need to apply our own minds to that. Okay. So in your drafting of your working document, take those factors into consideration as well. Can we move on to chapter 6?
Deal now with Chapter 6 of the Bill, which provides for services to adult victims of trafficking. Now, Clause 20, the heading there is accreditation of organisation to provide service. Subclause 1 provides that an adult victim of trafficking may only be referred in terms of Section 13, which deals with the referral of victims of trafficking to accredited organization that has been accredited in terms of this section and has a valid certificate of accreditation, which we will refer to in subsection 4A. Subclause 2 provides that the Minister of Social Development must prescribe a system for the accreditation of organizations who will provide services to adult victims of trafficking, and B, may prescribe the circumstances in which accredited organizations qualify for financial assistance within available resources. Subclause 3 provides that the system for accreditation must contain A, criteria for the evaluation of the programs offered by organizations to ensure that they comply with the minimum norms and standards, which we will refer to in Section 21. B, mechanisms to monitor the programs in question, and C, measures for the removal of organizations from the system where appropriate. Subclause 4A provides that the Minister of Social Development must issue a prescribed certificate to each organization that is accredited in terms of Section 20. Paragraph B provides that a certificate of accreditation will be valid for a maximum of 4 years from the date of accreditation. Paragraph C provides that a quality assurance process must be conducted in a prescribed manner in respect of each accredited organization. Paragraph D provides that the Minister of Social Development must compile a report containing the particulars of each accredited organization or organization removed from the system within 30 days of that accreditation or removal. Paragraph E provides that the Director General of Social Development must, without undue delay, provide a copy of this report by the Minister on each accredited organization removed from the system, to the relevant role players in his or her department, to the National Director of Public Prosecutions, who must distribute the report to all prosecutors, and to the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, who must distribute the report to all relevant role players in the South African Police Service who are involved in the administration of this act. Coming to the submissions that we received, in general, in the chapter 6, in terms of clause 20, the recommendation was made that the word may, which is in clause 20.2b, where it provides that the Minister of Social Development may prescribe the circumstances in which accredited organizations qualify for financial assistance within available resources, that word may must be replaced with the word must. It appears that there was confusion about the word may, because we are providing that the Minister of Social Development may prescribe the circumstances in which accredited organizations qualify for financial assistance. The department agrees that that the word may be replaced by the word must. That will take care of the confusion that we had experienced. Going to clause 21, which deals with the minimum norms and standards. Subclause 1 provides that the Minister of Social Development must, after consultation with interested parties, and then various ministers, that will be the minister in the presidency responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation, the ministers of basic education, finance, health, home affairs, justice and constitutional development, labour, police and state security, prescribe minimum norms and standards for accredited organisations. Subclause 2 provides that these norms and standards must deal with A. the safety of victims of trafficking, especially those at risk of harm. B. access to and provision of adequate health care. C. the provision of separate facilities for male and female victims of trafficking. D. hygienic and adequate toilet facilities. E. access to refuse disposal services or other adequate means of disposal of refuse generated at the facility. F. the drawing up of action plans for emergencies. And G, the manner in which information relating to a victim of trafficking particulars should be kept confidential. Subclause 3 provides that an accredited organization that provides services to adult victims of trafficking who have children in their care must, in addition to the norms and standards, also provide a safe environment for children, for proper care for sick children or children that become ill, and see safe storage of anything that may be harmful to children. We received suggestions from World Hope South Africa with regard to clause 21.2b, which provides for the access to and provision of adequate health care, to include the words and nutrition. Then we consulted with the Department of Social Development, which indicated to us that it will be provided for in their norms and standards. As I understand, these norms and standards are being finalized, and it will be workshopped later in this month. But that will be part of the norms and standards, and I'm not quite sure whether it is necessary to legislate in the bill specifically for nutrition as well. A further recommendation was that the norms and standards should also provide for child-friendly spaces with appropriate and adequate recreational facilities for the children to play and grow healthy and strong. The department supports the recommendation, and we would also like to point out that this was also discussed with the Department of Social Development, who also indicated that this will form part of the norms and standards.
May I just come in there? Although in this document it says that we do as a department support it, we do support the idea, but I think there must also be caution, and when we do our working document, because we are going to put all these things into the working document, I think there must also be a realization that perhaps it is not appropriate in all circumstances to try and detail everything that is being requested here due to cost implications, and perhaps be on a more broader basis, but that is something that we will look at when we do the working document.
To go back to the submissions that we have received with regard to clause 21.3, also Mori Songulalo and the Olive Lee Foundation indicated that the clause does not provide for the assessment of children in the care of adult victims of trafficking to determine if they are children in need of care and protection. And there we would like to point out that the concern raised is addressed in clause 22.5, which states that a child in the care of an adult victim of trafficking must be referred to a designated child protection organization or the provincial department of social development for investigation in terms of section 155.2 of the Children's Act to determine whether that child is in need of care and protection. They also, Molisongelolo also recommend that the bill should provide specifically for disabled victims of trafficking. The department supports a recommendation that an accredited organization should also provide for the care of victims of trafficking who are disabled, who become disabled as a result of having been trafficked. But we would also like to point out in this regard that this is something that the accredited organization must deal with in any event in terms of other victims of crime as well, and we feel that it is not necessary to legislate specifically in this bill for disabled persons. Coming to clause 22, the heading there is the program offered by accredited organizations. So clause 1 provides that an accredited organization must offer a program aimed at the provision of accommodation to adult victims of trafficking, the provision of counseling to adult victims of trafficking, and the reintegration of adult victims of trafficking into their families and communities, and B, may offer a program aimed at the provision of rehabilitation services to adult victims of trafficking, or the provision of education and skills development training to adult victims of trafficking. So clause 2 provides that an accredited organization may refer an adult victim of trafficking to an organization that offers a program referred in subsection 1B for purposes of obtaining those rehabilitation services or education and skills development training. Subclause 3 provides that an accredited organization that provides services to an adult victim of trafficking who has a child in his or her care must offer a program aimed at the reception, care, and development of that child. Subclause 4 provides that subject to subsection 5, a child referred to in subsection 3 must be cared for at any other premises only with the explicit consent of the adult victim in whose care he or she is. And subclause 5 provides that the child referred to in subsection 3 must be referred to a designated child protection organization or the provincial department of social development for investigation in terms of section 155.2 of the Children's Act to determine whether the child is in need of care and protection. Coming to the submissions that we received, Molisongelolo recommend that an accredited organization must inform and educate victims about trafficking in persons, provide sensitization, life skills, social competence education, provide programs to exit victims from exploitative practices, substance abuse detoxification and rehabilitation programs, sexuality, sexual health and reproduction health education. Other organizations also recommended that accredited organizations must offer programs aimed at the holistic psychosocial care of victims. With that regard, the department wishes to point out that we are of the view that the recommended programs will be covered by the programs already indicated in clause 22, which provide for accommodation, counseling, reintegration into families and communities, rehabilitation services and education, and skills development training. With regard to the offering of programs aimed at the holistic psychosocial care to the victim as opposed to counseling only, the department consulted with the Department of Social Development. We were informed that counseling forms part of the psychosocial care, and that the Department of Social Development supports the idea that we could in the bill provide for the inclusion of psychosocial care instead of just counseling. With regard to clause 22.1A3, there was also a recommendation that there must be a program aimed at offering pre- and post-integration. There again, as I understand from social development, that they will be able to a certain extent to assist where the trafficking took place within the borders of the Republic, but not if it is internationally. And their view is also that they simply do not have sufficient resources to do this. I think, as has been pointed out, that many of these provisions has cost implications. There was also a recommendation in terms of clause 22.1b by World Health that an accredited organization must offer recreational facilities which are often underestimated, although they are extremely essential to the healing process. The department indicated that we support such a recommendation, and that we could possibly amend clause 22.1b to add the provision of recreational activities as one of the programs that may be offered. There was a further recommendation that an accredited organization must offer legal support to the victim. Once again, the department supports the recommendation and suggests an addition which could read as follows: informing and educating victims of trafficking on their rights and legal and other measures in place for their protection. Coming to subclause 22.3, the recommendation was given by World Health South Africa that the subclause should be amended to read must offer a program aimed at the reception, care, protection and development of that child. In this regard, the department wishes to point out that clause 22.5 provides that a child in the care of an adult victim must be referred to a designated child protection organization or provincial department of social development for an investigation to determine whether that child is in need of care and protection. And if so, all the protective measures of the Children's Act will be applicable to that specific child. There was also, with regard to clause 22.4, a recommendation that the words "and also in the best interest of the child" should follow at the end of that sentence. There, we would like to point out that Section 9 of the Children's Act already provides that in all matters concerning the care, protection and well-being of a child, the standard that the child's best interest is of paramount importance must be applied. If we can proceed to clause 23, access to program offered by accredited organization. it provides that a person who has been certified to be a victim of trafficking in terms of Section 13 of this Act is entitled to access to a program offered by an accredited organization. The only comments that we received is from the Human Rights Commission, which refers to the certification of the victim, and as we've already indicated, that we are looking at changing the wording there. Coming to clause 24, the heading there is a plan to address needs of victim of trafficking, and it provides that an accredited organization must, having due regard to the views of a person who has been certified to be a victim of trafficking, must draw up a plan to address the immediate and long-term needs of that victim. The submission that we received there was that the clause should provide also, must provide for the immediate, medium-term and long-term needs of that victim. The department initially supported this recommendation, but at the previous meeting of the committee, it was the committee felt that medium-term will also be covered by long-term. Medium-term would include plans relating to the application, for instance, for a passport or in that regard. But the committee felt that could also be placed on the long term. So we propose that we stick to the immediate and the long term needs of that victim. Coming to clause 25, the heading there is return of adult victim of trafficking within the Republic. This clause was inserted due to the submissions that we received at an earlier stage, that there appears to be no provision for trafficking in persons that take place within the borders of South Africa. Clause 25 provides that an accredited organization may not return an adult victim of trafficking to an area within the Republic from where he or she has been trafficked without giving due consideration to A, the safety of the person during the process of returning him or her, and B, the possibility that the person might be harmed, killed, or trafficked again if returned to that area. In this regard, the recommendations that we received also relate to follow-up on psychosocial follow-up services to victims. And there, once again, we consulted with the Department of Social Development, who indicated that they have limited resources and it might not be always possible and practical to do so. Coming to clause 26, information management, this clause provides that an accredited organization must collect information on victims of trafficking relating to the number of victims of trafficking who have accessed the program referred to in section 22, the number of South African citizens or permanent residents who are victims of trafficking and who have accessed the program referred to in section 22, the number of victims who have accessed the program referred to in section 22 and who have not been reported to the South African Police Service. D, the countries from which foreign victims have been trafficked, the countries to which South African citizens or permanent residents have been trafficked, the purposes for which the victims have been trafficked, the methods used to recruit and transport the victims, the methods and routes used for trafficking the victims to and from the Republic, and the types of travel documents that victims have used or attempted to use across the borders of the Republic and how these documents were obtained. SAPROS 2 provides that the accredited organization must provide an annual report on the information to the Director General of Social Development. And in turn, in subclause 3, we provide that the Director General of Social Development must provide an annual report on the information to the intersectoral committee established by section 40. With regard to subclause 1, we received a recommendation that the clause there should, the sentence there should read that an accredited organization must in a prescribed manner collect information on victims of trafficking. The department agrees with this recommendation as it will just standardize the way in which the information will be given to the Department of Social Development. We also wish to point out that clause 26 is one of the clauses that we have identified for possible amendments to provide fully for information on internal trafficking. As I've said with regard to clause 25, that the idea was with a lot of organizations or commentators that there's not enough provisions for internal trafficking. And we identified clause 26 as one of the clauses that we could improve to provide better for reflect information with regard to victims of trafficking that have been internally trafficked. That's the end of the chapter, Mr. Chair.
Chair, thanks very much. This chapter dealing with services to victims of trafficking, I just want to remind members that I think there were some concerns raised when there were general discussions on the bill when we weren't going on a clause-by-clause basis. And I've already indicated when I spoke a few minutes ago is that we're really going to have a look at this bearing cost implications and the number of I think it also relates to the extent of the trafficking problem that we are sitting with. If I can go back to clause 20, for instance, the Minister of Social Development, 22 in fact, the Minister of Social Development must prescribe a system for the accreditation of organisations who will provide services to adult victims of trafficking and may prescribe the circumstances in which accredited organisations qualify for financial assistance. These provisions in clause 20 are quite similar to the provisions in the Child Justice Act relating to the accreditation of diversion programs. So I think that's where the wording came from. There was one recommendation that the word may must be changed to must, so that we must prescribe the circumstances in which accredited organizations qualify for financial assistance. There was a concern raised by the committee on a previous occasion. Do we in fact want to change it to a must? Shouldn't it stay may? Purely because of the financial implications that it might have. And then the details of some of the recommendations that are made by the commentators, one will also have to bear in mind when we do the redraft and when we do come back with the working document, we're going to take all these into consideration. But I just wanted to make the point that it was this chapter particularly was there were concerns raised about the financial implications, and we're going to have to strike that balance when we do the redraft.
First Mr. Steve Swart, followed by Debbie Schaefer.
Just assist me with the Child Justice Act. Did we put all the accreditation into the Act, or did we put it into the regulations? Maybe one needs to look here how much of this detail, if we're going to retain it, can go into regulations. obviously it would be easier to amend it at a later stage if it proves to be too onerous as far as costs are concerned, if it's in regulations. But I think it was in the Act previously. That's the first issue. And then, Chair, just generally to remind us, I think it was a concern that whilst we've got great sympathy for victims of trafficking, what about other victims of crime? And I think that was the balance that has to be struck. And I'm very sympathetic to victims of trafficking, but I'm just as sympathetic to victims of crime. So I think we need to have a debate around and find that balance is not going to be too easy. There obviously are quite severe cost implications here that we would need to consider when we further deliberate on this issue. And of course, one's also got to bear in mind, if you're dealing with foreign victims of trafficking, you've got to be very careful that you don't have more feelings towards foreigners if you're giving them too many, and that's xenophobic issues. But my emphasis is on the victims of trafficking. I'm very sympathetic. I'm sure we all are. But to strike that balance is not going to be very easy.
I agree with you completely, and your comments are appropriate. I'm not even thinking of victims of crimes. I'm just thinking of ordinary citizens who are without homes. And we're providing for accommodation for victims of trafficking. It's appropriate. I mean, it's what we expected to do in terms of the convention we've signed. But I foresee a situation where someone will say, but that person is a victim of trafficking. They seem to have more rights than I do. I, who was born in this country. But that's just one of the challenges we're going to have to face. Debbie.
I just want to know if there's any possibility of exploring other options other than just accredited places. I mean, obviously I know the importance of the health and safety issues, but what worries me is that according to the last figures, I think we had 13 accredited organizations across the country. Now, what happens if you have somebody in an area where it takes 3 or 4 hours or longer to actually get into an accredited institution? Who's going to do it? I know in practice it's not going to happen. Then there's going to be a big fight between the police and the NGOs and so on to get it. Is there some other way we can deal with it? Some other way of defining institutions that would be suitable that don't have to necessarily be accredited? I'm also concerned about how long does the accreditation process take? And I also have similar concerns about the resources. I mean, who's going to have time to sit and draw up a plan for the long-term needs of every single trafficking victim, depending how many there are, obviously. But, yeah, I think that's a general concern of the committee.
Just a few questions from me, Mr. Bassett and Mr. Stone. You've highlighted the cost implications, so I won't go there. 20 sub 4D. Minister of Social Development must compile a report. I wrote there for whom, and then further down it says for whom. Parliament is not in any way involved in that report, but later on under clause 40 there's a provision whereby, actually it's 42, whereby the minister, once he's consulted with a whole range of people, submit reports to Parliament. So I assume that's covered there, but we may need to just look carefully at that. Clause 21, Mrs. Stone, there's some things that must be done there to provide for the children affected. And we don't speak about education there. I wrote in the paragraph, in the side, education with a question mark. But of course, if someone is trafficked from Thailand, that presents its own challenges. How do you provide for education for a child from Thailand? So, I don't know. It's as you go through this, you begin developing a headache. Uh, And then lastly, Mr. Bassett or Mrs. Stone, clause 24, an accredited organization must draw up a plan for the immediate and long-term needs of the victim. Who monitors this is what I wrote down. Are these accredited organizations just going to be accredited, provided with funding, and then left on their own? Or is it the intention that the Minister of Social Development will provide in his regulations some form of monitoring to ensure that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing? Because we don't want at the end of the day to find that there's a whole new form of trafficking and other problems taking place that we're not aware of. And so I wrote there, who monitors this, the drawing up of the plan and everything else relating to these accredited organizations? So those are just some of the questions I've raised. I'm not sure if you're in a position to respond to them now, but if you can, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair. I'm actually very glad that the Department of Social Development is here, so they would be able to assist in answering some of the questions. Just with regard to the question that was asked before you posed your questions, Chair, with regard to the limited number of organizations that will be accredited to provide services to adult victims of trafficking. This was one of the things that we have discussed with both the Department of Social Development and the South African Police Service. The police were quite concerned about who will actually be responsible for transporting victims of trafficking to an accredited organization, because you might find that the nearest accredited organization might be 3 hours' drive from the police station. And I think to some extent the Department of Social Development and the police came to some sort of an agreement that the police will only be responsible for transporting victims of trafficking if it's within a reasonable distance from the police station. But obviously then social development will sit with the problem. But what the Department of Social Development also said was that they will go back to the provinces to look at the possibility of accrediting more organizations to deal with to provide services to adult victims of trafficking, and perhaps also to look at organizations that do not deal exclusively with victims of trafficking, but that would be able to provide services to victims of trafficking, and that might be organizations that might be much nearer to an accredited to the nearest police station. With regard to the issue of providing education to children or victims of trafficking that might not be able to speak any of the South African languages, obviously that in itself presents quite a difficulty, but I assume that currently the Department of Social Development must have encountered such cases, and it would be great if they can just assist us to tell us how they currently deal with those situations in practice. Also with regard to who actually will monitor the programs drawn up by accredited organizations, you will see in clause 23 of the bill, we also provide that the system for accreditation must also contain criteria for the evaluation of the programs, as well as for the monitoring of these programs. So obviously the department will be responsible to monitor the programs drawn up by the accredited organizations. I don't know whether social development got anything to add to that.
Before you begin, ma'am, I'm given to understand the two persons who've joined us are Solofele Moloi and John Groenewald. I hope I've got that correctly. You're both most welcome here. And if you feel at any stage that you wish to make an input on the deliberations and the questions, please indicate, because we value your input greatly. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Joan Groenewald. Thank you very much for the warm words of welcome. We appreciate that. With regard to the issues on children, the two of us are working with adults and their children. But we've been exposed to issues of the management of children at present in South Africa, foreign children are victims under the age of 18. And we experience a lot of challenges. That was a great concern to me as a parent, as well as a social worker, as well as a citizen of the country. And that was that we have in one place of safety children for two children for more than 2 years sitting there, and they from Mozambique, and they were very clever. After I made a follow-up last week, they said no, they adapted a language, a South African language, so the staff at this place of safety can at least now communicate with them. So that is in order. But my concern was that we do not have the international social service desk in, for instance, now Mozambique. And there will be other countries as well like that. So what we did from our side is we wrote to our head of the department and asked to engage with the international desk, international relations and cooperative governance, to put measures for us on the table on the SADC regions and other structures. I think from my side that's that. No? Thanks.
Good morning, colleagues and the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Tsholofelo Moloi. I have been working predominantly with adults, but there's no one who has come with children. But what we have been doing is that if we have an adult that doesn't speak our language in South Africa, we have a lot of cooperation from our counterparts in IOM, and also the ambassadors to help us with the translation and to get more information that will enable us to get more information for us to can reunite or reintegrate the victim with the families. So we do have a lot of cooperation from our counterparts in IOM and in the ambassadors to make sure that we reach out to the needs of our victims when we come into contact with people that we doesn't speak the language that we are speaking. So we do have a lot of partnership that help us at least to address those issues. But with children, as we all know about the Children's Act, says a child is a child, and there is no way that you can avoid giving a child the educational needs that she requires. We are helping our unit, which is the children's unit, that ensure that the basic needs, the educational needs of the child are being taken care of. Even though they have to use a medium instruction in English, just to make sure that the child's educational needs are not being compromised. So we are very close because we are from the Victim Empowerment Directorate, which deals with adult victims, and we also have a unit that deals specifically with children in terms of the Children's Act. So there is a close kind of partnership and relationship that we have within the department to ensure that the education of children is not compromised, and it is being addressed whilst awaiting either the transfer of the child to the place of origin or a transfer of the child back into the family. So I think when it comes to education, I can rest assured that we do not compromise the education of the children in our department. Thank you.
Honourable members, IOM stands for International Organization for Migration. I didn't know that. Vonani has just educated me. For which I'm grateful. In case you didn't know either, but I suspect you all did. Steve?
Just on that issue of the problems with Mozambique, now that I don't know where I am, but ends as a committee, but we could put
put something into a resolution to look at what SADC countries have signed the Palermo Protocol. We had input from the Foreign Affairs at one stage. Remember, we had a representative from them. And it would seem that many of the countries have signed it because State President Zuma addressed SADC leaders on the issue of trafficking at some stage last year, where he highlighted the need for cooperation. So it seems a lot of progress has been made, but that would immediately resolve the problem that social development is having. If there is agreement through SADC countries on and the signing of the protocol and then implementation of those social desks throughout SADC, because this is not just a South African problem, this is a SADC and African problem as well.
The child may emanate from Thailand. Okay, I think your point is taken. We thank you for those inputs. Much appreciated. All right. There being no further questions, Mr. Bassett.
Chair, I wonder if social development could help us. I think Ms. Schaefer raised the question about looking at alternatives, not, if I understood her correctly, not necessarily accredited organizations. Whether...
Yes, we do understand that we only identified 13 shelters from last year that could take or admit victims of human trafficking. But after our discussion with South African Police Services, it was made clear to us that sometimes it will be very difficult for them to also transport some of the victims which are far in terms of their distance from the police station where the victim will be held. So we have agreed in principle that we are going to now back to the provinces where we can identify more shelters that could be able to admit victims of human trafficking. Because I think the only thing that we need also to highlight to the portfolio committee that majority of the shelters are managed by non-government organizations, not by the government. So we need to make that very clear that we need also to help them also upgrade their shelters. As we all know that the phenomenon of human trafficking, it's always attached to a risky kind of situation. They feel that they cannot admit if their security measures are not in place, because they need also to be assisted in terms of upgrading, which is what we did with the 13 shelters. Before we can even accept that they admit the victims, we help them with the upgrading of their security measures. So it's the same going to apply also to the negotiations that we're going to take again this year to ensure that we get more shelters who are willing to take victims of human trafficking who are also within reach of the police stations in our areas. So that one is in the pipeline. We have agreed to extend our negotiations with our counterparts, which is our civil society organizations, to take more of our victims. But that's precisely depending on whether we can help them to upgrade their safety measures within their infrastructures.
I also raised the issue of how long does it take to get accredited, because I'm also concerned that, you know, it might take a year or two for an organization to be accredited, where we could perhaps define it in the Act slightly differently, or like a suitable institution or something, or, you know, if we just use something maybe not quite so specific. It could be accredited or complying with certain criteria approved by whoever, I don't know, but something like that.
Yes, we can try and put measures in place, but we don't have legislation in place currently. That is exactly what we are trying to do, because we said the bill is in the process of being promulgated, but even the 30 shelters are not accredited, but they have met certain standards of service delivery that would see them as appropriate for them to can admit. So we can maybe use the very same principle and measures that we use for the 13 shelters as an interim measure.
So ask the department, Mr. Chair, if they would look at some suitable wording and to ensure that we can not only necessarily be limited to those that have been accredited, but who may still comply with what we need without being formally accredited, maybe yet or if at all, if necessary.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, we certainly will look at that, particularly in the implementation stage at the beginning, but okay, we will do that.
Mrs. Molloy, I've seen you, Prof. Just one thing. You referred to shelters and their need to be upgraded with reference to security and a safe environment. The nearby police station, are they normally on board when it comes to this? Because quite clearly these victims at some point may want to leave the shelter, visit the nearest shopping center, shopping mall, and so once that happens, within the shelter they're fine, but once they leave then, you know, so are the police usually on board the nearby police station, aware of the existence of the shelter, etc.?
Yes, the police are aware. When we started to identify all the shelters, we circulated the list of all the shelters to our counterparts, Justice, SAPS, and Department of the NPA, so that they should know where the shelters are situated. But when it comes to the issue of freedom of movement for our victims, that is one of our other greatest challenges, because we don't have guarantee of their safety outside the shelter. Even though the police are aware, but we cannot hold anyone responsible to take them out of the shelter because you don't know whether they are safe or not. So that's one of the challenges that we're still having, to make sure that we want to make sure them to be as safe as possible. But for them to go out and do whatever shopping or visit, it's something that we still really have to look at in terms of our regulation, to see how best we can protect them if they want to go out. Because at the moment, our shelters don't feel safe to take them out for shopping, but maybe for medical reasons or for to go to court, but not for shopping, because they don't know where their perpetrators are or the syndicates are. So we just playing very safe, not to expose them to any danger at this stage.
In other words, there's only so much you can do. All right.
Chair, this is one of the things that we have detailed discussions with the police about. And I think the police made it quite clear that they do not have the capacity to accompany or escort victims of trafficking to wherever they want to go. And they've also indicated that if there's a risk to the life of the victim who's accommodated in a shelter, they would not be able to place security guards. Obviously, where a victim is willing to be a witness, then such a victim can be placed in the witness protection program. But if the victim is not a witness, what the police indicated, that as a measure of last resort, what they suggest is that a victim should be taken into protective custody, provided that the victim do consent to be taken into protective custody. That will basically mean locking the victim up in a police cell.
They're shaking their heads, but anyway. All right.
Chair, what Ms. Dumont's talking about takes us back actually to Clause 13. It's reporting and referral of victims. And we did have discussions on this. Subclause 4, 13, 4 says a police official to whom a report has been made and who suspects that a person is a victim of trafficking must refer that person to an accredited organization. And I think this is what Ms. Dumont's talking about, that the SAP said they have difficulty with the word refer. And I think when we dealt with Clause 14, that whole issue was possibility was raised that it should be, the word refer should be notify. I'm just trying to place this part of the discussion in context, so it's something that hasn't been resolved. Chair, just to get back to your one question, you asked the question in clause 24E that the report must be made available to a whole range of institutions. Are you requesting us to also put Parliament in there as well? Section 47, that's taken care of.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just before we proceed, I received discussions with Joan yesterday with regard to the programs that we are providing for in this bill. And just before I left, I received a proposal from her, or just a concern actually that the Department of Social Development had, in that relates to rehabilitation programs, especially pertaining to drugs. I think, John, if you can help me here, the problem is that drugs are highly specialized and you need medical intervention, and the services that are rendered by accredited organizations do not necessarily provide for medical intervention. So that is just something that we need to look at. I don't know whether John wants to comment on that.
Thank you very much. We are very much concerned about the issue that she addressed now, put on the table, and we experience that a good percentage of our victims of human trafficking was exposed to drugs, to the use under force to drugs. So they do not only need, some of them do not only need a detox in a hospital of 2 to 3 days. What I need is a longer term program in a rehabilitation a drug center. And I requested her to take cognizance of that and try to insert something that she can present to the portfolio committee for us to make it easier for us to get access to private treatment centers as well as government treatment centers, as they did with children that's been trafficked and who are in need of care and protection. They had this insert in this bill with regard how do you go about, will I refer to the Children's Act. There is I don't know what is the exact name today, but a previous one was the Treatment of Drug Dependency Act. I don't know if the name changed, but if they can look at that, that will be grateful, especially to us as service providers. Thank you very much.
Shall we proceed?
Thank you, Chief. We now come to Chapter 7 of the bill, which deals with compensation. Article 6 of the Palermo Protocol requires states parties to have in their domestic legal system measures in place offering victims of trafficking the possibility of obtaining compensation for damage suffered. Therefore, we have put clause 27 in the bill. Now, the heading there is compensation to victims of trafficking, and the whole chapter consists of only two clauses. Subclause 1A provides that the court may, subject to paragraph C, to which you will come just now, on its own accord or at the request of the complainant or the prosecutor, in addition to any sentence which it may impose in respect of any offence under this Act, order the person convicted of that offence to pay appropriate compensation to any victim of the offence for damage to or the loss or destruction of property, including money, physical, psychological or other injury, being infected with a life-threatening disease or loss of income or support suffered by the victim as a result of the commission of that offence. Subclause 1B provides that appropriate compensation includes expenses reasonably expected to be incurred in relation to the matters referred to in subparagraphs Roman 1 to 4 of subclause 1a. Paragraph C of clause 27.1 provides that the magistrate's court may not make an order for the payment of compensation as provided for in paragraph A, which exceeds the monetary jurisdiction determined by the minister from time to time by notice in the Gazette, as provided for in section 300 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Subclause 2 provides that in cases where the amount of the damage, the injury or loss suffered exceeds an order for compensation, made in terms of subsection 1, a civil action may be instituted by the victim for the recovery of the excess. Subclause 3A provides that where the court makes an order for compensation to be paid in terms of Clause 27, it must also determine the time within which payment is to be made and the method of payment, including whether it is to be paid in installments or not, and if it is to be paid in installments, the intervals between the payment. Paragraph B provides that a magistrate or a judge may, on application of the convicted person on good cause shown, vary the conditions and installments according to which compensation is to be made. Paragraph C provides that a court that has acted in terms of paragraph B above, whether differently constituted or not, or any court of equal or superior jurisdiction may, on good cause shown, reconsider any decision that it has made regarding the payment of compensation and substitute it with a new order. Subclause 4A provides that an order for the payment of compensation as provided for in subsection 1 has the effect of a civil judgment of the magistrate's court, and the person in whose favour the compensation order was made is deemed to be the judgment creditor, and the convicted person against whom the order was made is deemed the judgment debtor. In terms of paragraph B, the judgment creditor may, where a compensation order has not been complied with, file with the clerk of the court or the registrar of the court, which made the compensation order, an affidavit setting out the details of the compensation order and stating that the compensation order has not been complied with or has not been complied with in full, as the case may be, and the amount outstanding, and must request the clerk of the court or the registrar to furnish him or her with a certified copy of that compensation order. The clerk of the court or the registrar of the court that made the compensation order must, after having inspected the court record concerned, to verify the contents of the affidavit, furnish the judgment creditor with a certified copy of the compensation order, and must record on the court record that the judgment creditor has been furnished with a certified copy of the compensation order. In terms of paragraph D, the judgment creditor must file the certified copy of the compensation order with the clerk of the civil court of the magisterial district in which he or she or the judgment debtor resides, carries on business or is employed. The compensation order must then be executed in accordance with the provisions of the Magistrates' Courts Act of 1944 and the Magistrates' Courts Rules regarding warrants of execution against movable and immovable property, and the issuing of emolument detachment orders and garnishee orders. In terms of subclause 5A, where the court makes an order for compensation to be paid in terms of this section, it may, in its discretion, issue a warrant addressed to the sheriff, authorizing him or her to recover the amount of the compensation by the attachment and sale of any movable property belonging to the person in question. Paragraph B provides that the amount which may be recovered in terms of the sale must be sufficient to cover, in addition to the amount of the compensation, the costs and the expenses of the warrant and any attachment and sale of the property. Subclause 5C provides that if the proceeds of the sale of the movable property are insufficient to satisfy the amount of the compensation order as well as the extra expenses regarding the warrant and attachment and sale, A high court may issue a warrant ordering the case of a compensation order being made by a magistrate's court, authorize that magistrate's court to issue a warrant for the levy against the immovable property of the person in question of the amount unpaid. If we look at the submissions that we received with regard to clause 27, there were recommendations made by the World Hope of South Africa that social service professionals involved in trafficking cases should get legal support and be compensated duly from matters arising from the cases they handle. We indicate there that a social service professional includes a probation officer, a development worker, a child and youth care worker, a social auxiliary worker, and a social security worker who are registered in terms of the Social Service Professions Act. And these persons will be compensated by the organizations that employ them. In terms of the bill, organizations providing services to victims of trafficking will be entitled to financial assistance. With regard to provisions regarding compensation, it was pointed out by the International Association of Women Judges that although this chapter provides for the recovery of claims in the civil courts, this could effectively deny the victims of trafficking proper access to justice as civil proceedings are lengthy and expensive. And victims may not have the financial resources or the time to pursue the civil action. And they recommend that an expeditious procedure should be provided for. Legal representation at the expense of the state should be provided for victims of trafficking to institute civil claims. And it should also provide for the freezing and forfeiture of the assets of traffickers. Furthermore, preservation order similar to that provided for in the Prevention of Organized Crime Act will address the issue. We would like to point out that we say here in terms of clause 27, 2, in cases where the amount of the damage, the injury or the loss exceeds the order for compensation, a civil action may be instituted by the victim for the recovery of the excess. And furthermore, clause 27(4)(d)(e) provides that the victim may, where the compensation order has not been complied with or fully complied with, proceed with a specific process that has been set out there to recover that. It does mean, and we appreciate that a victim of trafficking will have to make use of an attorney if he or she wants to recover the compensation order or the excess by way of civil action. The department also wished to point out that we do not support the inclusion of provisions similar to those in the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, as the Prevention of Organized Crime Act can in any event be used to confiscate property or proceeds derived from the trafficking of a person. A further concern that was pointed out was that the clause should be amended to make reference to the regional court, which now has civil jurisdiction, and then various sub-clauses are mentioned there. We would like to point out that the definition of court in the bill includes a regional court. and that will take care of that recommendation. There were also recommendations made by the Institute for Security Studies and Women's Legal Center, as well as Activist Networking Against the Exploitation of Children, the Counter Trafficking Coalition, and some others, that the ordinary civil damages procedures in the Magistrates Court and the High Court require the victim to disclose personal information in his or her capacity as a plaintiff. And it will enable the traffickers to establish the victim's whereabouts or the particulars of the victim. And recommendations were made that a general victim of crime fund should be established to for the victims to be able to get compensated. Another matter that was pointed out was that provision should be made to allow victims to stay in the country while pursuing a civil claim for compensation. We first supported the provision or the proposal that we could in clause 18 provide that one of the reasons for the extension of a visitor's permit would be where the victim is engaged in proceedings to recover the damage or the compensation. But we afterwards thought about that, and we're not quite sure whether that will really be feasible in view of the fact that civil actions might take years to finalize, that the state will have to care for the victim of trafficking, and once again that we do not have the necessary resources. There was also a concern expressed by the Commission for Gender Equality that the monetary jurisdiction of district and regional courts may delay compensation or even prejudice a victim where compensation has to be awarded because the compensation is usually determined at the end of the trial. We propose a possible solution which we would like first to clear with the state law advisors, to provide that nothing in this Act precludes a magistrate's court for any regional division from making an order which exceeds the criminal jurisdiction of that court, in which case the order must be submitted in the prescribed manner to a judge of the High Court having jurisdiction for confirmation. But as I've indicated, we would like that proposal just to be cleared with the state law advisors. Coming to clause 28, which deals with the compensation to the state, the clause provides that the court may, in addition to any penalty which it may impose in respect of any offence in terms of this Act, in addition to any order for the payment of compensation to a victim in terms of section 27, and upon application by the prosecutor, make an order for payment by the convicted person to the state of an amount in compensation for expenses incurred or reasonably expected to be incurred in connection with the care, accommodation, transportation and repatriation of the victim of the offence. And subclause 2 provides that an order for the payment of compensation as provided for in subsection 1 as the effect of the civil judgment of a magistrate's court and the provisions of section 27(4) apply with the necessary changes to this order. Coming to the submissions that we received, there was a recommendation that provision should be made for an accredited organization to receive compensation. And that the following new subclause be added upon application by the prosecutor, the court may make an order for payment by the convicted person to an accredited organization for compensation for expenses incurred for services rendered to the victim or victims of trafficking in children in their care. The department would like to discuss this with the NPA, and hopefully that will be done when we have our meeting regarding the other submissions by the NPA. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. It was only last week that the NPA made submissions on this proposal. They in fact said that clause 28 should be dropped because it's dealt with in poker, and we're going to take that up. We were mandated to go and speak to the NPA, and we will be doing that likewise with clause 27. The proposal made by the NPA was, is there any need for this provision? Why can't section 300 of the Criminal Procedure Act not be adapted so that you use that mechanism to provide compensation, and it would have the added benefit that all victims of crime can benefit from something like that. I did raise a concern. I think there have been calls in the past over the years that section 300 be adapted along those lines so that everybody can get those benefits. Section 300 at the moment only limits, I think, the criminal court, having found a person guilty of an offence, can make an order for payment of damages in the case Yes, that's correct. So it does have a limitation. And the concern that is raised is that you have a criminal court presided over at present largely by a person who's versed in criminal law and criminal procedure. If you want to include something along the lines we have in our goal, which is damage to or the loss or destruction of property, including money, that might not be a problem, but it's physical, psychological, or other injury, being infected with a life-threatening disease, loss of income or support. Those are issues that might prove to be difficult in a court, in a criminal court. We can have a look at it. It was raised last week by the NPA. I did raise my concerns about it, and that's why the provisions are in this bill, and section 300 hasn't been amended at all. Section 300 allows a magistrate's court, a district court, to impose a compensation order of 100,000, and a regional court can impose up to 300,000 rand as compensation. So just by way of background, I thought I'd mention that. And then I think there is also a realization, and it's been raised by the commentators, that basically what we're saying to the victims or complainants, if a compensation order has been made and it's not complied with, sorry, you have to go through our civil courts, and that takes a while, and you've got to have an attorney. That is the reality that we face. But there is, subclause 5 does make provision for an alternative, possibly an easier approach, where the court may make an order for compensation to be paid and may, in its discretion, issue a warrant addressed to the sheriff, authorising him or her to recover the amount by the attachment and sale of any movable property belonging to the person. Engelo has already been through that, but that is an alternative, and it was put in there to try and put another mechanism in place that is possibly easier than going the full civil route. And I cannot remember, but this subclause 5, I think, is based on provisions that are in the Criminal Procedure Act as well. Chair, that is just by way of background before questions are put.
All right, I'm not going to hold your questions. I'm told tea is served. But, honourable members, just please bear in mind, these two clauses, specifically the NPA wanted them removed. All right, for reasons already alluded to. Firstly, 27 excludes other victims of crime from compensation. Secondly, clause 28, they correctly point out we already have an asset forfeiture procedure or process in place which adequately caters for that. So please just bear that in mind. We need to, if necessary, debate these two clauses, but apply our minds to whether we need them so that we can assist Mr. Bassett and his drafting team. They, in turn, will be meeting with the NPA sometime next week to further engage on these two clauses. With that, we'll adjourn for tea for 15 minutes. Thank you.
Okay.
Assuming we're going to leave it.
Good morning, is Roderick available, please? Actually, can you please come and fetch the TV? I think this is like the sixth time they're asking you guys to do this. It's for Bangeni. She's at home from 12. Hi, Roderick, it's Langa. Roderick, can you guys come and fetch the TV today, please? My girlfriend, she's going to be there from 12. She's made a special arrangement to be there at 12, from 12 today. I understand that maybe yesterday the 3 o'clock could have been a bit too late for you guys, given the time that we also informed you. But, 12 should be okay. 12 till whenever you guys can come. Sorry? Yeah. But at 12 o'clock she'll be at the flat. Can you guys be there? No. No one phoned. I only found out in the evening yesterday when I got home that the TV was not picked up. So you guys will fit. You. Yes, Rhonda Bosch, but from 12 she'll be there, so any time after that you guys can pick up the TV. And how's the progress on the other one? Yeah, the 74 centimeter one. You were waiting for parts. That's okay, there were two television sets. It was this Telefunken and then there was another one, flat screen LCD, 74 centimeters. The job number, I'm not sure about the job number. It's I think it was also a Telefunken. Yeah, flat screen. I'm not sure, to be honest, I don't have the details for that one, but it does also fall under Bangeni, the two TVs. Yes. Yeah, 74 centimeter flat screen. The last we heard, you guys were waiting for parts. That was also early, so second week of Feb. Okay. Her cell number, you can call in 083-4337. So I can tell her that she should expect you guys. Alright. Okay. Thanks, Roderick. Bye. No. Hey, how's it? No, I'm alright. What are you up to? You trying to calculate the provisional tax? Actually, I've got some documents from SARS and how all that works. Let me think. They're on my computer at home. on my computer at home. I'll give them to you. Maybe you can just try and... Sorry? No, they're Parliament's documents. Yeah, they did a presentation on how all that stuff works and things like that. So I'll give them to you, or you can just get them from my personal computer at home. Well, the laptop, your laptop, yeah, at home. But play there. Listen, I just spoke to these guys. They said that they're going to pick it up. Yeah, so from 12, yeah, they'll phone you. What? Did you say they phoned you? When? Oh, okay, because this guy doesn't know. Yeah, anyway. And then I need the details. No, he didn't know this. He didn't know that they'd phoned. Because he asked me, and I was like, no. He didn't know that they had phoned, because he asked me, and I was like, no. Can I please have the... I'll need the details for the other TV, because I need to follow that up as well. I need to know the job number, the model. Is it a Telefunken as well? Telefunken, okay. Okay, yeah. Okay. So, and then we'll switch to Kung Caesar one. Okay, what's the error number? Okay, well, what? Emailed it to me. Okay. Alright, okay, fine, I'll check. Okay. Okay, bye.
honourable members, the reason we're late is because the three of us were debating the RAF fund and what it's done in terms of damages to people wanting to claim. I just remind you of the UN protocol that we are signatory to, and the fact that in terms of that protocol, we're expected to put measures in place that offer victims of trafficking the possibility of compensation. I'm saying this to members of the committee because when we do get to debating this particular issue, and perhaps Mr. Bassett, even when you meet with the NPA, this is something that needs to be taken into consideration, and whether our right to civil claims through the courts provide for that possibility of compensation instead of specifically putting it into the bill as it is now. There are a host of problems which may arise now when we look at these two clauses, but let me open it to you for questions.
I think that there's a lot of discussion that still needs to take place. I went through the minutes of the meeting with the NPA, and I think there's still the three options are as it is, deletion totally or amend 300 to make 300 broader, and that's where the discussion is going to continue. Whilst I'm not in principle opposed to extending 300 generally, but the implications of that on the criminal court case roll could be quite vast, and that's something that would have to be considered when discussions are held with the NPA. Secondly, you correctly pointed out that we already in our electoral system allow for claims for damage, and the protocol section is section 6. Each state party shall ensure that its domestic legal system contains measures that offer victims of trafficking the possibility of obtaining compensation for damage suffered. That would fall squarely within our common law, delictual law, I would think. And I think those are some of the issues you need to discuss whether. So I think we are covered already to a large degree with our delictual system. Chair, thank you.
Just also on the issue of proof, I mean, it's one thing to say, as you said, to prove damages to property is fairly easy, but I mean, to try and prove psychosocial damage, psychological income, loss of income, I mean, that involves huge numbers of reports and experts' testimonies and so on. And I do think it's a serious concern, first of all, whether the magistrates have the experience to deal with that, and secondly, the issue of how long it's going to take to finalise. I think that might also end up clogging up the criminal court system quite a lot.
Bassett, in your response, where should it begin? Because if I traffic someone from Thailand, I stop there and bring the person here, do I claim civilly here or there?
I think I've already said what I wanted to say, and that's being confirmed here. I have a concern about going the Section 300 route, that we could, I tend to agree that we could possibly, what Mr. Swart has said, Article 6, I think we would be able to argue as a country that we already have a mechanism in place to deal with compensation. I wonder whether Ms. Steelman can come in at this point during the investigation of the whole issue, how that came out. I think there is a strong feeling and a strong call for something very specific. I don't know whether Mr. Human can help us there. As you indicated, we've still got to go back to the NPA to thrash these out as a result of the discussions in the committee last week, and we will also canvass these areas.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, apart from the obligation that we have in terms of the convention, one of the reasons why these specific provisions have been included in the bill was because most victims of trafficking would not be able to afford a lawyer to institute civil proceedings. But one thing that I've also just thought about is that currently the legal aid do provide for representation in civil proceedings in certain cases, providing that people do pass the means test. The problem here with legal aid is that with regard to your South African victims of trafficking, it will not be a problem to follow that route if they're not able to afford a lawyer to institute civil proceedings. The problem comes with foreign victims of trafficking. In order to qualify for legal aid, you must prove that you're ordinarily a resident in South Africa. And you would not be able to prove that when you're a foreign victim of trafficking. Perhaps the route to follow would be to have discussions with a legal aid board and to see to what extent would I be able to assist foreign victims of trafficking to institute civil proceedings. But the other problem that actually goes with that is that we also know that civil proceedings can take years, and if you have to allow foreign victims of trafficking to stay in the country for the duration of civil proceedings, that will also mean that government will have to support those victims for that duration. It might be more than 3 years. So there's various options that one can follow, and I think we just need to go back and to have discussions with the NPA, the Legal Aid Board, and the various role players, that when we come back to this committee, that we can actually come with a solution that agreement has been reached on, and we can present it. We can present you with the possible options.
Briefly again, the critical balancing act is other victims of crime in South Africa. Again, you know, we're faced with that situation. And I'm aware of cases of women that have been raped that have then gone the civil route and have sued the rapist and have succeeded in civil court on dealing it with the help of the Women's Legal Center or something like that. So that's the balance again you've got to strike, besides the implications of our court roles, but again, to give a specific right here for people that have been trafficked, what message are we sending out to other victims of crime? You need to consider that as well.
Chair, Mr. Swart mentioned three options: to keep Section 27, to use the common law, or use Section 300. But just the one advantage of having Section 27 here is that victims, the whole process of getting compensation is kick-started in the court immediately after trial, because it says the court may, on its own accord or at the request of the complainant. So you're kick-starting the process, where if you go the dealing route, it's entirely up to the victim. The victim might not know about that, but at least here there's a kick-start to a compensation process.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, indeed, it's a question of having to balance the interests of all concerned, the victims of this particular crime and the other victims of crime. And the question is, because of the logistical problems that we're likely to encounter, if we expand it to others, does that mean then this right, which ought in any event to be which ought to be enjoyed by all victims of crime, should it be taken away from these particular victims merely because other equally deserving victims don't have access to this particular provision? I think that's a question that as they interact with the other bodies that they have identified, think about. But if it were Chair, if this clause were to remain as it is, is it not rather too prescriptive? For instance, in 3.8, where it says when the court makes an order for compensation to be paid in terms of this section, it must also determine the time within which payment is to be made and the method of payment, including whether it is to be... That kind of thing, is it something that you want to be in an act like it is here? Is it not in any event a matter of course that the court, when making an order, will want to satisfy itself that it is going to be implementable? It is not going to be just an empty judgment. It's going to be a kind of judgment or order that is going to be implementable. Is it something that has to be detailed in an act like this? Is that normal or what?
I think I've made note of your concern, and I think this is one of the issues in our discussions with the NPA, that we will also discuss this with them and also just look at, you know, the alignment between these provisions and what is currently being provided for in the Criminal Procedure Act.
Chair, I think there might be a merit in, and we must have a look at this. The idea was to make sure that the victims get their money, but I do take note of what is said, and we will take that up. Thank you.
We seem to have dealt with that for now, so let's move on to Chapter 8, Mrs. Stone.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chapter 8 deals with the deportation and repatriation of victims of trafficking. Clause 29, the heading there is summary deportation of victim of trafficking prohibited, and it then just states that subject to Section 30, the summary deportation of a victim of trafficking is prohibited. The reason why we have provided for this is that we need to protect the victims of trafficking, to deport them, deprive them of access to services such as healthcare and counseling, and it also deprives the state of an opportunity to obtain evidence from that witness to prosecute the traffickers. Clause 30 deals with the repatriation of victims of trafficking from the Republic. So Clause 1 provides that the Director General of Social Development may not return a foreign child who is a victim of trafficking to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked without giving due consideration to the best interest of the child standard as provided for in Section 7 of the Children's Act, the safety of the child during the repatriation process, the availability and suitability of care arrangements, and the safety of the child in the country to which that child is to be returned, and the possibility that the child might be harmed, killed, or trafficked again. So Clause 2 provides that the Director General of Home Affairs may not return an adult who is a victim of trafficking to his or her country of origin or a country from where he or she has been trafficked without giving due consideration to the safety of the person during the repatriation process, the safety of the person in the country to which the person is to be returned, and the possibility that the person might be harmed, killed, or trafficked again. And the Director General of Home Affairs must also, before returning a person referred to, and in paragraph A, to his or her country of origin or from where he or she has been trafficked, request the Director General of Social Development to take reasonable steps as provided for in Section 31A, and to inform a person in the prescribed manner of any arrangements that have been made for his or her reception in the country to which he or she is to be returned. So clause 3 provides that clause of that section 30, clause 30 now, does not prohibit the voluntary return of an adult who is a victim of trafficking to his or her country of origin or the country from where he or she has been trafficked. With regard to clause 30, we received a submission from the Institute for Security Studies and Women's Legal Center that there should be additional safeguards around the repatriation procedures, and they recommend that there should be a definition of voluntary repatriation. The department is of the view that victims should be provided with the necessary information regarding their return and suggest a possible amendment of clause 33 by the addition of a provision which could read as follows. At the end thereof, provided that the victim has been given information on the protective measures offered to victims of trafficking in terms of this act, and be a clear explanation and adequate description of the procedures to be followed in respect of repatriation. There was also a recommendation that a provision should be made to ensure that victims are only repatriated to the countries where they have a legitimate right of residence. The department initially supported the recommendation that provision be made for the victim to be returned to the country where he or she has a legitimate right of residence. At earlier meeting of this committee, when the submissions where the department responded to these provisions or to the recommendation, the portfolio committee, however, indicated that it is not necessary because the country will in any event only receive a person that has a legitimate right to be in that country. We also received a recommendation from SWET that repatriation should never occur without consent, both for children and adults. And also from the Legal Resources Center, that in the event that the victim does not cooperate with the authorities, the bill is silent on what will happen where it is not safe for the victim to return to his or her country. Our response there is that the bill provides that victims may not be returned to their countries even if they refuse to cooperate with the authorities. Clause 30 provides that the Department of Social Development in the case of a child and the Department of Home Affairs in the case of an adult may not return that child or adult victim to his or her country of origin or from where he or she has been trafficked without giving due consideration to the safety of that victim and the possibility that he or she may be harmed, killed or trafficked again. And we also wish to point out that clause 18.4 now also provides that a visitor's permit can be extended on humanitarian grounds if the victim is likely to be harmed, killed or trafficked again if returned, as well as clause 19, which provides that a foreign victim is able to apply for permanent residence if he or she may be harmed, killed or trafficked again. As I think we have pointed out also earlier in the meeting that we had discussions with the Department of Home Affairs on whether it is better for a victim of trafficking to apply for temporary residence or for permanent residence or to apply for refugee status. The view of the Department of Home Affairs is that they prefer refugee status. There are more benefits, if I understand them correctly, attached to being a refugee as having a temporary residence. Yes. We have asked them to, they actually requested an opportunity to take that further with, follow that up with their refugee officers, and I'm still waiting for a reply and a formal view on that. Going to clause 31, the heading there is assistance to foreign victim of trafficking, and it relates actually to it must be read with clause 30, as it provides that the Director General of Social Development must take reasonable steps to find suitable family members or an institution or organization that renders assistance to victims of trafficking in the country to which a person is to be returned, and that is willing to provide assistance to that person, and to provide the Director General of Home Affairs with information in respect of the request made in terms of Section 30. We have not received any submissions or recommendations with regard to that clause. Coming to clause 32, repatriation of victim of trafficking to the Republic. It provides that with due regard to the safety of the person and without delay, the Director General of International Relations and Cooperation must, in cooperation with the Director General of Social Development, assess the risk to the safety and life of a person who is a citizen or permanent resident of the Republic and who is on reasonable grounds considered to be a victim of trafficking if he or she is returned to the Republic, must facilitate the return of a person referred to in subparagraph 1 to the Republic, and must advise the Director General of Home Affairs on measures to secure the reception of that person at the South African port of entry. Furthermore, the Director General of Home Affairs must facilitate and accept the return of the person referred to in paragraph A, where necessary, take measures to secure the reception of a person referred to in paragraph A at the South African port of entry, must issue travel documents or other authorizations as may be necessary to enable that person to travel to and enter the Republic, must at the request of another state that is a party to the United Nations Protocol to prevent, suppress and punish trafficking in person, or to an agreement relating to trafficking in person to which the Republic is a party, verify that the person who is on reasonable grounds considered to be a victim of trafficking is a citizen or permanent resident of the Republic, must upon entry into the Republic of a child who is on reasonable grounds considered to be a victim of trafficking, refer that child to a designated social worker for investigation in terms of Section 155 of the Children's Act, and upon entry into the Republic of a person who is on reasonable grounds considered to be an adult victim of trafficking, refer that person to an accredited organization or provincial department of social development for an assessment referred to in Section 13.5. There were no submissions received on Clause 32. I might mention that Clause 32 contains some of the provisions, or similar provisions to Section 286 of the Children's Act, dealing with the assistance of a child who is a victim of trafficking. Clause 33 deals with the escorting of a child of trafficking, and it provides that if the Director General of Social Development considered it to be in the best interests of a child who has been trafficked, must authorize an adult at state expense to escort the child from the place where the child was found to the place from where the child was trafficked. And so Clause 2 provides that the Director General may not act in terms of subsection 1 unless he or she is satisfied that the parent, guardian or other person who has parental responsibilities and rights in respect of that child does not have the financial means to travel to the place where the child is in order to escort the child back. Once again, Clause 33 contains provisions similar to Section 286(2) of the Children's Act dealing with the assistance to a child who is a victim of trafficking. And that is Chapter 8, Chairperson.
Christine, please remember if at any time you want to come in, please do so. All right. There doesn't seem to be any, which means we can proceed to Chapter 9.
Okay, Chairperson. Chapter 9 deals with general provisions. It starts with Clause 3-4. The heading there is trafficking of a child by a parent, guardian, or other person who has parental responsibilities and rights in respect of a child. Also wish to point out that it contains provisions similar to Section 287 of the Children's Act. It provides that if a children's court has reason to believe that the parent or guardian of a child or any other person who has parental responsibilities and rights in respect of a child has trafficked that child, the court may suspend all the parental responsibilities and rights of that parent, guardian or other person and place that child in temporary safe care pending an inquiry by a children's court. So Clause 3 provides that any action taken by a children's court in terms of Subsection 1 does not exclude a person's liability for committing the offence of trafficking in persons as provided for in Section 4 that contains the provisions on the offence of trafficking in persons. We have received a recommendation on Clause 34 that the words other person, that is in the second line of that clause, should be replaced with the word caregiver as defined in the Children's Amendment Act of 2007. Our response there is that the words other person are in line with the provisions of the Children's Act, as any person is entitled to approach the Children's Court to have certain rights and responsibilities in respect of a specific child. The words other person are also in line with Section 287 of the Children's Act, which also refer to the words other person. Coming to Clause 36, which deals with the national instructions and directives, Chairperson, it's quite a lengthy clause. I'm sorry, I forgot Clause 35, which deals with international cooperation. Subclause 1 provides that the President may, on the conditions as he or she deems fit, enter into an agreement with a foreign state that is not a party to the protocol in respect of any matter pertaining to trafficking in persons, or he may enter into an agreement with a foreign state that is a party to the United Nations Protocol in respect of any matter pertaining to trafficking in persons for the purpose of supplementing the provisions of that protocol or to facilitate the application of the principles contained therein. So Clause 2 provides that an agreement may not be in conflict with the provisions of the United Nations Protocol. Subclause 3 provides that the President may agree to any amendment or revocation of an agreement. And Subclause 4 provides that an agreement or amendment or the revocation thereof is not of any force or effect until that agreement, amendment or revocation has been approved by Parliament. We haven't received any submissions in that regard, and I just can point out that Clause 35 contains also provisions similar to Section 283 of the Children's Act. Coming to Clause 36, National Instructions and Directives, it kicks off with Subclause 1, that the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service must, after consultation with the Directors General, Health, Home Affairs, International Relations and Cooperation, Justice and Constitutional Development, Labour, National Intelligence Agency and Social Development, the Chief Executive Officer, Government Communication and Information System, and the National Director of Public Prosecution, issue national instructions as provided for in Section 25 of the South African Police Service Act of 95 regarding the following matters with which all police officials must comply in the execution of the functions in terms of this Act. The division or divisions within the police to be tasked with the investigation of trafficking cases, the manner in which the reporting of an alleged trafficking case is to be dealt with, the manner in which trafficking cases are to be investigated, the manner in which victims of trafficking should be identified, interviewed and treated with particular attention to the vulnerability of child victims, measures to be taken in instances where foreign victims of trafficking are not conversant with any of the official languages, the referral of victims of trafficking to social, health care and psychological services, measures to be taken to ensure the safety of victims of trafficking or other potential witnesses if there is a likelihood that harm might result to them as a result of the reporting and consequent investigation of and prosecution of the case. The circumstances in which consultation with the prosecuting authority is required with a view to guiding the investigation of trafficking cases for purposes of obtaining the required evidence and to identify relevant witnesses. Measures to be taken in order to ensure the detection of trafficking in persons at South African ports of entry and borders. The kind of information that must be obtained from a victim of trafficking with a view to provide such information to the prosecuting authority for purposes of determining the quantum of the damages suffered by the victim for which he or she may claim compensation. The collection and analysis of information on reported cases of trafficking, including information relating to the countries from which victims are being trafficked to the Republic, the countries to which South African citizens and other residents are being trafficked, the nationality of victims transiting the Republic and the countries to which they are being trafficked, the purposes for which the persons who have been identified as victims have been trafficked, the profiles of the traffickers and their victims, including age, gender, nationality and sex, the routes used by traffickers to enter and exit the Republic, the methods used by traffickers to recruit and transport the victims, the types of travel documents that traffickers and the victims have used or attempted to use to cross the borders of the Republic, and how those documents were obtained, and the link between trafficking operations and other forms of organized crime. Subclause 2 provides that the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service must provide an annual report on all the information or any other relevant information to the Intersectoral Committee. Subclause 3 provides that the Director General of Home Affairs must, after consultation with a variety of Directors General, as well as the National Director of Public Prosecutions and the National Commissioner of the South African Police, issue directives regarding the following matters with which immigration officers must comply. Again, the manner in which the reporting of alleged trafficking cases to be dealt with, the manner in which victims of trafficking must be identified, interviewed and treated with particular attention to vulnerability of child victims, measures to be taken where victims are not conversant with any of the official languages, the referral of victims to social, healthcare and psychological services, the referral of victims or other potential witnesses to the South African Police Service or relevant institutions or organizations if there is a likelihood that the victims or the witnesses may be harmed or killed, and the collection and analysis of information on victims of trafficking who have been repatriated to the Republic in terms of Section 32, relating to the number of victims who have been repatriated and the countries to which they have been trafficked, the profiles of the victims, including the age, gender and sex of the victim, the purposes for which the victims were trafficked, the routes used by traffickers to exit the Republic and to enter countries to which the victims were trafficked, the methods used by traffickers to recruit and transport the victims, and the types of travel documents that traffickers and the victims have used or attempted to use to exit the Republic and to enter the countries to which the victims were trafficked, and how those documents were obtained. Subclause 4 provides that the Minister of Home Affairs must submit all directives provided for in Section 3 to Parliament 30 days before they are issued, and after the expiry of the 30-day period, publish them in the Gazette. It further provides that the Director General of Home Affairs must provide an annual report on the information that is required to be collected by Home Affairs or any other relevant information to the Intersectoral Committee. Subclause 5 provides that the Director General of Labour must, after consultation with again a variety of Directors General, as well as the National Director of Public Prosecutions and the National Commissioner of the Police, issue directives regarding the following matters with which all Labour inspectors must comply in the execution of their functions in terms of this Act. The manner in which the reporting of an alleged trafficking case is to be dealt with, the manner in which victims should be identified, interviewed and treated, with particular attention to vulnerability of child victims, the measures to be taken in instances where foreign victims are not conversant with any of the official languages, the referral of victims of trafficking to social, healthcare and psychological services, the referral of victims of trafficking or potential witnesses to the South African Police Service or relevant institutions or organizations if there is a likelihood that the victim or witnesses may be harmed or killed. So, subclause 6 provides that the Minister of Labour must submit any directives provided for in terms of subsection 5 to Parliament 30 days before they are issued, and after the expiry of the 30-day period, publish them in the Gazette. Furthermore, the Director General of Labour must provide an annual report on any relevant information to the Intersectoral Committee as determined by that committee. Subclause 7 provides that the National Director of Public Prosecutions must, after consultation with the Minister and a variety of Directors General as well as the Commissioner of the South African Police Service, issue directives regarding all matters which are necessary or expedient to be provided for and which are to be followed by all members of the prosecuting authority who are tasked with the institution and conducting of prosecutions in cases relating to trafficking in persons, including the following. The manner in which cases relating to trafficking in persons should be dealt with, the criteria to be used and the circumstances in which the prosecution must apply to court for an order that the witness and in particular child complainants give evidence by means of closed circuit television as provided for in section 158 of the Criminal Procedure Act if the court does not make an order on its own accord in terms of that section, or if an application in terms of subsection 2B of that section is not made. The criteria to be used and the circumstances in which the prosecution must request the court to consider appointing a competent person as an intermediary as provided for in section 170A of the Criminal Procedure Act in respect of a child witness. The circumstances in which the prosecution must request the court to consider directing that the proceedings may not take place in open court as provided for in section 153 of the Criminal Procedure Act. The circumstances in which the prosecution must request the court to consider directing that the identity of a witness should not be revealed or that it should not be revealed for a period specified by the court as provided for in section 153 of the Criminal Procedure Act. The circumstances in which the prosecution must request the court to consider prohibiting the publication of the identity of the complainant in the case as provided for in section 154 of the Criminal Procedure Act, or the complainant's family, including the publication of information that may lead to the identification of the complainant or the complainant's family. The need to inform victims of trafficking about their right to and the process to claim compensation, the kind of information that must be obtained from a victim of trafficking for purposes of determining the quantum of the damages suffered by the victim for which he or she may claim compensation. The collection and analysis of information relating to the number of trafficking prosecutions, convictions, and the form of sentences imposed on traffickers, the number of victims of trafficking awarded compensation orders, the number of cases where the courts did not provide compensation orders, and the reasons for doing so. Subclause A provides that the minister must submit any directives provided for in subsection 7 to Parliament 30 days before they are issued, and after the expiry of the 30-day period, publish them in the Gazette. It further provides that the National Director of Public Prosecutions must provide an annual report on the information or any other relevant information determined by the intersectoral committee established by section 40 as determined by that committee. So clause 9 provides that the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, the National Director of Public Prosecutions and the Directors General, Home Affairs, Labour and Social Development must each develop training courses which must include training on the national instructions or directives as the case may be, and provide for and promote the use of uniform norms, standards and procedures to ensure that all police officials, prosecutors and other functionaries are able to deal with matters relating to trafficking in persons in an appropriate, efficient and sensitive manner. Subclause 10 provides that the national instructions or directives must provide that adequate disciplinary steps are taken against police officials or prosecutors or other functionaries who fail to comply with any duty imposed on them in terms of this Act or the national instructions or directives. And subclause 11 provides that a national instruction or directive issued under this section may be amended or withdrawn in a like manner. Coming to the submissions that we've received, there was a recommendation by the Institute for Security Studies that while there are agency or department-specific issues, cross-cutting issues such as the manner in which victims must be identified, interviewed and treated should be formulated by the intersectoral committee. And they provided us with a redraft of Clause 36. It is the department's view that it might be good for the intersectoral committee to issue directives regarding the cross-cutting issues. We have discussed this also with the various departments that are reflected in Clause 36, and they are all in favour of standardised directives with which all the departments must comply with, and then we can provide for the specific functions of each department. I also wish to point out that clause 36 has also been identified as one of the clauses which we could amend to provide more fully for to reflect more fully internal trafficking in persons. That will be with regard to the collection and analysis of information, they could add there certain information with regard to the methods and the routes used by traffickers who traffic people inside of South Africa. Further submissions that we received on clause 36 is a recommendation that the national instructions and directives must apply to all government departments to prevent, protect and suppress trafficking in persons, and all government departments must report on trafficking in persons and related cases. Our response there is that clause 39 provides for the adoption of a national policy framework to ensure a uniform, coordinated and cooperative approach by all government departments, organs of state and institutions in dealing with matters relating to trafficking in persons. So that clause 36 will only apply to the departments that will really be involved in the investigation and the prosecution and the services to victims of trafficking. Another concern we received is why the Department of Labor is not mandated to collect data, as the department is a key role player when dealing with the detection of in-country trafficking for the purpose of labor exploitation. Our response there is that the Department of Labor does not need to put in place an internal information management system. Clauses 12 and 13 stipulate that the labor inspector must report cases of child and adult trafficking respectively to a police official for investigation. Cases reported to the South African police will be entered into the crime administration system. And in terms of the bill, SAPS must collect and analyze information on reported cases of trafficking, and which will include those cases reported to them by labor inspectors. We also received a recommendation by the World AIDS Campaign that the following be added to the obligations, the reporting obligations in clause 36 of the different departments, reading the impact of the legal status of sex work on the ability of the police to identify and resolve cases of trafficking for the purpose of sex work. We do not support this recommendation. As you are aware, the South African Law Reform Commission is currently working on proposals for law reform to determine whether or not adult prostitution should be legalized or not. And we could not, in this bill, provide for that. Also, in discussions with the Department of Social Development, the committee will have noted that there is no provision for the Department of Social Development to issue directives. The reason being that in terms of the Children's Act, there are quite a lot of directives already. But they indicated that they it might be good to include them because with regard to adult victims, there might not always be sufficient directives. And they were also in favour of standardised directives to be issued by the intersectoral committee. coming to clause 37, the heading there is legitimacy and validity of documents. Clause 37 provides that the Director General of Home Affairs must, at the request of another state that is a party to the United Protocol or to an agreement relating to trafficking in persons, verify within a reasonable time the legitimacy and validity of travel or identity documents issued or purported to have been issued by the Department of Home Affairs and suspected of being used in the commission of an offence in terms of this Act. We received no recommendations or comments on that clause, and I will proceed with clause 38, which deals with the annual report on abuse or deliberate neglect of child and findings by children's court that the child is in need of care and protection. And clause 38 provides that the Director General of Social Development must submit to the intersectoral committee established by section 40, as determined by the intersectoral committee, an annual report on all cases of abuse or deliberate neglect of a child and all findings by children's court that the child is in need of care and protection because of abuse or deliberate neglect of the child as contained in Part A of the National Child Protection Register provided for in Chapter 7 of the Children's Act insofar as those cases and findings relate to child victims of trafficking. And we also have received no further recommendations or submissions with regard to clause 38, and that is the end of chapter 9.
Oh, just two issues. 36.9, I must say I have some serious reservations about the National Police Commission making appropriate, efficient and sensitive directives on anything. But secondly, on the issue of point 36.1J, is it not usurping the function of the courts to provide that whoever is now going to do it? National Commission of Police is going to specify the kind of information that must be obtained to prove the claim for damages. I mean, that is the court's function to determine, surely. I'm very concerned about that.
Just to respond to the last question, obviously it will be the court's function to, at the end of the day, decide what information should be taken into account in order to determine the quantum of the damages. But the police will be responsible for the investigation of the case. And I think it's also the responsibility of the police to provide the prosecutor with sufficient information in order to proceed with the case and to prosecute successfully. Not that the police will actually determine what the court should take into account. It's just a matter of the police providing the prosecutor with the relevant information.
And I just thought that maybe you just have a very careful look at that wording, just to make quite sure there's no room for. I mean, yeah, that's fair enough, but please.
I think it's intended to facilitate when you eventually get to that stage, but we'll have a look at the wording. Chem, perhaps just to get guidance, and maybe I should have asked this question earlier on, when we go through the submissions that have been made and the suggestions that have been made, can we assume for purposes of drafting our working document further that we can include the issues, the proposals that have been made where we as a department agree with them and there have been no concerns raised by the committee, I think. For instance, a prime example, and that's why I'm raising it now in section 36, it was suggested that an intersectoral committee must make or make directives in respect of intersectoral issues. So I'm going to assume then that those are the issues that we can include in the working draft. Okay, thank you.
That's correct. But ultimately the committee will decide whether it likes it or not. So that's fine. Honourable members, we've been slowly depleted, and we've come to the end of chapter 9. I think we've made pretty good progress this far. So I would like to suggest that maybe we should break for lunch now and reconvene at 2. So, with your permission, can we do that? All right. Debbie?
Hey, Rashad, the meeting again at 2, I don't know if that was on the program. Yeah, they're going to continue at 2. Okay. Okay, alright. Sure. Well, there was 4 hours yesterday. I think 2 to 4. 2 to 4, there's only a little bit left. I don't know why they don't just finish this. I think I'm gonna come back and fetch my bag. No, it's cool. It's cool. I'll just speak to the police. Yeah, they're fine. Yeah. All right. Okay. Cheers.